Hey, I'm Josh, co-founder and CEO of Expansive, and this is the FM Fix, our podcast. Today's guest spends his days right at the heart of one of FM's biggest challenges, finding and keeping the right people. Chris Sycamore is Associate Director at Cobalt Recruitment, where he partners with FM leaders across the UK to help them hire the talent who keep workplaces running. With over a decade recruiting across every corner of FM, from technical roles to senior leadership, Chris has a unique perspective on how the industry is changing, what skills are in demand, and why culture and attitude now matter as much as qualifications. In this episode, we're talking about the talent crunch in FM, why hiring has never been tougher, how expectations are shifting, and what the future workforce might look like as technology, sustainability, and workplace culture continue to evolve. Chris, for anyone who hasn't met you yet, what's your world in FM recruitment and what keeps you excited about it right now?
Awesome. Well, so my world in FM recruitment is traditionally your total FM or your hard FM, white collar and above, typically. Yeah. So it won't be so much the hands-on roles like the actual M&E engineers themselves, although increasingly that is happening a little bit. But it'll be your FMs, your building managers, anywhere from assistant level right the way through to director. Primarily property companies. Again, there's so much demand and they tend to have bigger teams, but also more and more now from non-property brands, whether that's a restaurant chain or a law firm or anything in between. I guess why I'm still in FM is I'm always a bit of a sucker for a narrative. And I feel like when I started speaking to FMs 11 years ago, there's definitely this kind of underdog perception where it's an industry where not everyone recognizes what it involves. Less people actually kind of appreciate it and the work that goes on behind the scenes. Because let's face it, when a lot of things are going right in FM, it's not visible. And it felt like it's an industry that was kind of finding its feet in that regards, that was growing in importance, that was growing in recognition. It's definitely taken strides over the decade or so I've been recruiting for it, but there's still a long way to go there, which is what I find quite stimulating and exciting about it. And beyond that, I find that as cheesy as it is, most FMs are they're good people. They're easier to speak to. There's definitely a few more egos getting into the industry now, but not many of them compared to others. And I just found that most people were down to earth. They wanted to get the job done, wanted to talk plainly, and they didn't want to be, they just wanted to treat everyone equally and actually just do the right job. And it's something that I found where it's so easy to speak to them and where it is finding its feet. It's just kept me in it till 11 years. I just still find it interesting.
So how is that narrative changing? How's it changed, you know, over the last 11 years?
Just before I joined Cobalt and started getting to FM recruitment, there was something called the Stoddart Report came out, and it always talked about how the workplace in particular was evolving. And it previously used to be that you'd go to work and good work would happen within it. It'd be a place with four walls, an internet connection, power, and the good work would happen within it. I think what the Stoddart report said and what people have been realizing, particularly post-COVID even more so, is that actually these workspaces, these places in general, they're drivers of productivity, they're drivers of well-being. And ultimately now where people can work more remotely, if every time you go to your office, you find that it drains you and you're not getting your best work done, why would you go there? If every time you go to do physical shopping at a shopping center, you find it a stressful experience, then why wouldn't you go online? So if we're recognizing that property has more of a role in shaping people's experiences, then you need to get in great people to manage that space and you need to expect probably more out of them. And I think where people are recognizing the role of property as a driver of productivity, of wellness, of connectivity, that's where people are starting to recognize the importance of these managers. And it's still not the case for everyone at this stage. There's still work to be done, but it feels like it is now slowly being chipped away at, which is why I feel the industry is still just finding its feet and growing from strength to strength, to be honest with you.
I really like that, you know, what you're saying about putting people at the heart of FM.
Oh, yeah.
And growing the sector and involving the sector. And, you know, as you say, you know, getting, you know, elevating the importance of the role of a facility manager.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the thing, like, we'll probably talk about those kind of people skills, but they are becoming more and more important. And I think whereas years ago, people kind of recognize, they probably put more emphasis on the technical stuff and the hard services, more and more now it's actually those people skills, those people that understand their interpersonal role in driving these experiences forward that I find that hiring managers and clients and businesses are looking for. So yeah, as much as it's all about the property, because that's what you're managing, the people are at the center of everything we're doing.
What are the toughest challenges in FM recruitment at this point in time?
There's a couple. The first of which has been the case ever since I started. So I don't think it's actually changed that much, in the sense of there's a lot of FMs out there, but there's a perception from a lot of heads of department that actually there's not much top tier talent out there. And there's a lot of people that are kind of not keeping up with new technologies, that aren't keeping pace with this level of customer expectation and customer experience. So there's a lot of people working out there in FM, but the people that kind of can combine those traditional hard skills with the tech, with the softer skills, there's not really seen as very many of them, which means there's a scramble for a limited amount of that top tier talent if you have got a grade A property. The second thing we're really seeing at the moment is a big pressure over salaries. And there's a lot of hiring managers I'm speaking to that when they first go to hire, particularly if they're a smaller business that doesn't have to hire very often, or someone creating a new team for the first time, is they'll have their idea of what a salary should be for a position. And we're saying, look, that's actually what that salary would have been 5 years ago. Right now, it's that number plus sometimes 20%. But the problem is, obviously, when people have strict budgets, they're trying to match up, how do we get the best talent, but where maybe they don't have access to the right funding they need to have. And that's an ongoing battle, I find, for a lot of companies we speak to.
But if you want the best people, you have to pay the appropriate salaries.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, again, that's the problem I think we find with this is we'll have these conversations. And ultimately, sometimes when a head of facilities comes to me with a role, they can turn around and say, I know this isn't enough, but this is all I can sign off. And it's not so much them, but it's almost the people behind the scenes in their own businesses, whether it's a board level or their bosses. That said as well, though, I think there's sometimes some businesses where they will chuck money at people to get them to stay. And we are seeing some businesses paying what we'd consider over a market rate. But at the same time, if you're not actually looking after your staff beyond just giving them golden hello and a big bag of money, then ultimately people aren't going to stay and do their best work either. So yeah, you absolutely have to pay people what they're worth, 100%. But there's also other things that are important to get right too.
But it sounds like educating senior leadership teams on the importance of FM, or facility management, would help solve that problem with the discrepancy over, you know, what is an FM truly worth?
Yeah, big time. And I think there's still this perception, this is why I talk about, you know, that underdog kind of aspect of it. There's still this perception that FM is just a cost. And I suppose because there isn't always that direct link of how much money it's making, and it's more seen as about costs and cost savings, that perhaps those conversations are a little bit harder to have behind the scenes. One of the other things I think I found, and I've been saying for a long while now, is I think FM is a very hardworking industry, and it's prone to a lot of people that will roll their sleeves up and just muck in and get the job done, which makes for great people, but it means that people perhaps don't always recognize the importance of what they're doing, or they don't know how to sell themselves, because for them it's, well, it's my job, it's what I need to do, it's what needs to get done to deliver the results. But actually it means that when it comes to articulating yourself in these boardroom conversations or to your own businesses, a lot of people aren't able to connect that I did A, which led to B result for my company, which saved them C amount of money. So it's a combination of, I think FM is seen as a cost, but I don't think FM really is good enough at shouting about the good things about it and actually the critical role it plays, because I said there's a few egos starting to come into it, but realistically most FMs are quite humble, I would say.
We've seen that there's not enough young people entering the facility management sector. Why do you think that is, and what can be done to reverse that trend?
To be honest, firstly, not enough kids know about it. I didn't have a clue what facilities management was. I was interested in a career in recruitment. Cobalt seemed like a great brand for me, but it was only when I started work. I mean, I'd vaguely heard of what surveyors and stuff were. Yeah. I'd heard of things like asset management, even I didn't understand it. Didn't even know what facilities management was. And the first sort of 3-4 years I was doing it, when I was speaking to family or friends, and but so what do you actually recruit for? And I said, oh, facilities management. The answer was a resounding, what's that?
Yeah.
So if people don't know about it, they're not going to grow up wanting to do it. Again, I don't think the industry shouts about its successes enough. So I don't think people necessarily know the rewarding parts of what FM can give them. People aren't always aware of what the trajectory is. We've got to turn it from an industry that people kind of fall into accidentally as a second or third career, and more talk about the benefits of why people should choose about it in the first stage. So it's kind of awareness, not just of the industry itself, but also of the successes that can be had with it. And equally, I don't know if enough are people going to schools? I don't necessarily hear of enough apprenticeship programs, although I'm starting to hear murmurs of more of them happening. So actually just more tailored programs aiming at it would help as well massively. But while people aren't doing that, it's just going to exacerbate the talent shortage because there's not enough people starting it at that early stage of their career.
I love what you said, because we've had conversations on the FM Fix about how did you get into facility management? And the most common answer, I fell into it.
Fell into it. And this is the thing as well, where people are coming into it from other industries. I mean, the good thing about FM is you can get into it from any pathway. Yes. Like, it's so open, whether you've come in from hospitality, whether you're a retail manager, maybe you're in the military, maybe you're a security, anything. I've seen people getting from all kinds of weird and wonderful pathways. But invariably, when people are getting into it as a second or third career, they have already got used to a certain level of earning potential. Yeah. People do have more mortgages and more responsibilities. So actually you find that if those people will be demanding a slightly higher salary, whereas if you want to get in people at an entry-level role and you are a bit more cost conscious, then it makes economic sense as well to be bringing people in at that start of their journey where they don't have that level of responsibility. They can learn the trade and then see them advancing salary-wise. But again, it's all coming together in that perfect storm really to cause those problems I mentioned.
Why is it so hard to find people with the right blend of technical know-how and people skills?
It's a difficult thing to get right. I mean, like, the technical skills often will take a lot of experience or a lot of studying in terms of certain qualifications to have. So they're not like you can get them at the click of your fingers. The people skills, again, I think it's because the industry hasn't historically emphasized it as much. So most of the people at a senior leadership level, not always, but probably did come up in that environment where it was more about the technical knowledge. And so it's taken a while for that to kind of trickle through. I think the other thing for it, though, is that it's harder to train on the soft skills than the technical skills. That's my opinion, but equally, that's the opinion of most directors, most senior leaders I've spoken with. So it's easier to train on those technical skills to put someone through their IOSH or their NEBOSH or their IWFM. But at the same time, what we're seeing is, particularly where, you know, FM is a cost, a lot of the hiring is done quite reactively, or it's one where someone's moving on, or we've taken on this new building, we've got this amount of time to find someone new, we have to get someone who can hit the ground running. If you're looking for people that can hit the ground running, you need to go for established talent who probably have more of that old school skill set of emphasizing the hard skills rather than the softer skills. Whereas if you had more time and more resources to train people, then you probably could look at the people skills and actually building that technical aspect into them. But I think it's a case of, to go back to your question, the industry didn't used to emphasize this as much. There's a lot of people that have more of the technical skills. And right now, there's such a demand to get things right straight away and to have an instant impact that people aren't having the time to train those technical skills into those with the softer skills, which kind of culminates in not many more people joining the industry that have both, or developing the industry that have both, which again creates more of a talent shortage for people with both, more scarcity, harder to recruit for them. And it's just a cycle that carries on and carries on.
So you've been speaking about the importance of softer skills. Mm-hmm. What are the top tips you would advise for candidates who want to improve on their soft skills?
So in terms of people that want to improve on their soft skills, I think first and foremost, working in a customer-facing environment, first and foremost. Softer skills aren't really something you can study for. There's no exam that you can answer 10 questions. It's like, right, you're now qualified to be a people person. And I think some of that comes from practical experience. And I mean, for me, one of the reasons why I found working in recruitment, which is obviously a very people-centric industry, was from time working in numerous restaurants and seeing people from all kinds of walks of life and seeing that kind of the importance of little details in terms of service delivery to their experience there. So I think actually just throwing yourself into people-centric industries is useful. You need a lot of empathy. And I think you need to learn to not take things personally. I think so many times people get defensive in these industries where, whether it's your client, whether it's your customer, someone's complaining about an issue. People take that personally and then get into this element where you end up arguing against the person, which then, even if you're right, even if you know you're right and you're laying it out logically, the customer or your client is going to remember feeling talked back to, argued down, and they're annoyed with you. So having that empathy and realizing that it's not you versus your customer or you versus your client when they have that problem, but actually it's you and them versus the problem, and showcasing a bit of empathy for it. as well, I don't think it's possible to over-communicate. So I think if there's something that's happening in the building, if there's a minor delay, something's going to take slightly longer than anticipated. I think in terms of that old school mindset would be, it's just going to be an extra day. They're not going to be mad about it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, even just showing that appreciation for, look, this was supposed to be here on this time. This is the reason for the delay. It should be here about this stage, but I'll keep you updated. And just that constant communication, I think it's better to be almost like too much communication where people are like, okay, you don't need to update me as much, but it shows you're thinking of them. It shows you're putting them first.
Shows you care.
Exactly. So definitely, I don't think you can communicate too much. That empathy helps. And equally, just throwing yourself into these customer-facing environments, because the more experience you get, the more you'll learn from it.
How are sustainability, digital transformation, you know, artificial intelligence changing what clients are asking for?
It's an interesting question and probably a difficult one, because sustainability a bit more so, like people want to know that they are delivering energy savings, and it's more again through that lens of cost saving rather than actually trying to save the planet, which is a whole different kettle of fish we could go down. As for data technology and AI, so far I'm not actually seeing it come up as something that people are asking for. I think if I was going to put forward a great senior facilities manager to a role, no client is asking me, well, how are they using AI in their current business to develop to deliver on efficiencies? How are they using new tech to do X, Y, and Z? It's not really coming up. It is just still fundamentally about what are their maintenance skills like, what's their customer experience like, what's their budgeting like, how much management have they had? So it's not really coming up at this stage, which is surprising.
Why do you think that is? Because AI is very much here today.
You know what? I mean, it is being used, like you said, and I think everyone, ChatGPT is obviously the poster boy of that industry, and people will be using that in different ways. I guess it probably comes down to, again, that reactiveness and not having the time to actually take a step back and look at how can we improve on what we're doing. It's more a case of there's so much pressure, I think, to deliver results straight away at a low cost for your customer or your client, that I don't think people necessarily have that space to kind of innovate, because they don't have the time, because it is kind of a high pressure role. Whereas I think if there either was more funding into it or more of a sense of proactiveness coming into the industry, you'd probably find people more open to looking at the ways it can innovate. And I'm not saying it's like a Luddite industry stuck in the Stone Ages. These innovations are coming, but they're just not still at the forefront in the way that perhaps they should be or will be in future.
I think education has a part to play here in educating, you know, the importance of it and how it can change. Because I think the very best facility managers out there will be the ones who want to learn about the technology, who want to adopt the technology, who want to try it and see how it's going to, you know, improve their work, their work-life balance, you know.
100%. It comes back to that adaptability again. If people are stuck in their ways and not adapting to new technology, eventually they'll go extinct with it.
Yeah.
I think, and this is maybe getting away from FM and more of a generalist thing, but even from my perspective as a recruitment manager and as a senior manager at Cobalt, there seems like every day there's a new technology and someone messaged you about how this is going to innovate your business, how this is going to increase X amount of performance for you. There's a lot of noise. Yeah. And I think it's tough to know actually which ones to pay attention to and which ones are going to be those game changers for you and which ones actually aren't going to improve as efficiencies, but just end up being more of a cost. And I think, again, there's probably more of that pressure on, if you get something wrong and it increases the cost for your business right now and it doesn't lead to those results, then it's more trouble than it's worth. So maybe it's a case of people probably being a bit risk averse with trying these new technologies because they're not sure which ones are going to lead to the biggest results. But those early adopters that get it right, they'll be utilizing it more. Certain products will start to stand out more and more of the industry will start to use it. It'll just be a slow process.
Do traditional qualifications and certifications still carry the same weight as they used to?
Again, this is a really interesting question and it comes up all the time. I was at a coffee with a client just last Friday when they were bringing up about the importance of qualifications. For me, experience is still the most important thing. And I think most industry leaders, if they were honest, would say the same. You don't want someone that's got all the academics but doesn't have an ounce of practical experience. However, what we have found where there has been more of a scramble for talent, particularly so post-COVID, is a lot of people have started to rise quite high in their career through the soft skills, through the ability to say the right things and be a smooth talker. And again, they might not admit it, but there is a growing perception across senior leaders that actually what you could expect from a senior building manager from a regional FM 5 years ago, the same title will have less knowledge right now. So I think it's going to sound hypocritical in a way, because I spoke about the importance of those soft skills or those customer service skills, but actually the qualifications are important. And I think more and more now, where we are having questions over salaries, a lot of hiring managers are reverting to, well, if we're paying this salary, I want someone to have their EBOSH or the X qualification. So I think experience still does trump all. Like, you have to have practical experience. But right now, particularly where it is a battle to justify higher salaries, I'm seeing more hiring managers revert back to, have they got that academic qualification? Even if it is only a case of, I want to be so sure they actually can walk the walk rather than just talk the talk. A industry-approved accreditation, it really does just show that actually, yeah, I can bank on this person having at least that level of knowledge, which makes it safer. So experience is more important, I would say, but qualifications, it's almost coming full circle now where the importance of them is starting to be re-recognised, I would say.
What skills are most in demand in FM right now?
I feel like I'm going to be a broken record with this, but again, it is the client liaison, the people skills. You want to make sure you keep the buildings you've won, the portfolios you've won. So again, you want to make sure that people are happy with the service, but actually that they are communicated with and they know what's going on. So as much as, yeah, you need people that are technically capable, and this is why it probably seems hypocritical from what I've just said, we are still seeing that actually those people that just understand the impact of their role, they know how it fits into the bigger picture, and they can articulate that and communicate it clearly to create that sense of experience for their customers. In terms of individual skills, that's what I see coming up time and time again, year on year.
And what skills are underrated?
Probably the ability to, one, be dependable. You say you're going to do something, you get it done. If you're not going to be able to get it done, you can communicate that so no one goes AWOL, particularly in the regional roles where perhaps, you know, it's easy to hide behind, like, oh, I was just visiting a different property. So dependability, just the ability to get things done. I think where there has been seen as this talent shortage for real top tier FMs, there is almost an element of people that kind of get promoted to a certain level and then stay there. I don't know if you've heard of the Peter principle, but it says that people get promoted to their point of incompetence and then they rarely get demoted. So there's a lot of, as I said, that talent that is seen in the eyes of senior leaders as a bit more average, but therefore there's those people that are more tending to perhaps sweep things under the carpet. But because they've got great names on their CV, because there is that demand for instant talent that already knows that industry, they'll keep getting employed. But ultimately it means that the level of service delivery will be not bad, but not great either. So actually having that dependability that people are proactive, they know what they're going to get done, and they're able to actually deliver on it, that's something that's worth its weight in gold for most hiring managers right now, I would say.
In your content, you talk a lot about finding FMs who have the 5-star customer service mindset. What does that actually look like in practice?
The difficult way to answer that question is it's one of them things that you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
And if you try and define it, you can talk about people that are polite, that are courteous, that are friendly. But, and no disrespect to these brands, but if you go into a Travelodge or a Premier Inn, you'll probably have to use all those adjectives to describe them. If you walk into the Langham or the Savoy, they will also have those attributes, but it'll just be different. So I think there is a certain element of you know it when you see it. And again, I think it just goes back to people understanding their role. They know the impact of it, but equally they have that empathy for their customer and how this is going to impact on them. And that doesn't mean that person's a doormat. You can push back on them in the right way, but it shows that, again, that you're doing it with that position of care. It's rather than me trying to prove you wrong as a customer, it's we're on the same side. Here's a problem. This is what I'm doing to try and overcome it for you. That's what I'd say.
What's your advice to organisations that want to attract more diverse or more tech-savvy talent?
I like how you group those both together there in terms of tech-savvy and diverse. I think, again, the problem is where people need instant results, you do just go for the talent that's immediately available. And it's getting better, but FM is seen as an old male, pale and stale industry.
Yep.
And whilst that's changing, it's still not enough. I mean, just using latest data from LinkedIn this morning, I think only 36% of people with a job title facilities manager are female or identify as female. So if you need an instant result, and you don't have time to train someone up from different sectors, you're probably going to get a bloke, and it's probably going to be a bloke of a certain age. Yeah. Whereas if you want to encourage people from different backgrounds, one, obviously, it's also about championing it, as we said before. So actually people realizing it's a career of choice where they may not have heard of it before. But actually, it's giving yourself the space to train and develop people. So actually, if you have got a role that isn't down to someone being replaced or handing their notice in unexpectedly, if you know you're going to be winning a portfolio or have a new building coming online, can you look at actually developing mentor schemes? So you hire someone that maybe is from a different background, or, you know, isn't from that usual pool, but they have more training and guidance from one of the more established leaders in your business. Whereas if everything is left to the last minute and you just need a quick result that you know is going to hit the ground running straight away, you're probably going to get those talent that isn't that diverse, that is doing things in the same old way they've always done. And they won't do a bad job, as we said, but you're not likely to get much innovation or new thinking that way.
So what are the quick wins for organizations in terms of, you know, the job ads they put out, their selection process?
In terms of what they do about it, I'd say actually being able to tailor the adverts. So a lot of times people send me a JD and respectfully, it's the same one they've been using for 9 years. Mm. You know, I'll look back and I'm like, it's exactly the same. They might have just changed the salary on it, obviously, but the wording's exactly the same. And it could be said for any one of their roles in any part of the UK. Whereas I've got other clients that, I mean, particularly with AI, they're probably not actually spending that much time on it, but they're tailoring it to the buildings. They're tailoring it to practical examples from 2025 as to what people are doing in their business and where it's led them. And when people see that, people want to be involved with it. I think as well, like one thing that a lot of businesses are bad at, and it's probably why they're struggling to retain talent, is people don't lay out a pathway for their staff in terms of this is where this role can lead you, both in terms of financially, but also in terms of career progression. And if you can somehow, as part of your hiring process, really talk about not just what this role is going to be doing now, but where the company can take you over the next 5-10 years, show them practical examples if you can, people will buy into it. People talk a lot about people job hopping now, and I think the median tenure for an FM is 2.4 years. It's 1.7 for the wider FM industry, but people don't want to hop jobs. People don't want to move around, but it's they feel they have to because they won't be able to progress otherwise. They feel like they won't be able to achieve a certain salary otherwise. And it's ridiculous to me that I can have a client come to me and say, I'm looking for a building manager role right now. I want someone at this level. And then I'm like, I've been on the job boards this morning and I've seen you've got 3 people in your business with that exact profile,
yeah,
that are now looking outside the company. How do they not know about this role internally? Maybe they're not right for it. But if they're not right for it, they should know why and what they have to do to get better. Whereas when there's that kind of vacuum of information, people will leave and they will look at opportunities outside, which is, I've kind of gone a bit off tangent there in terms of talking about actually attracting people. But to go back to the original point, I don't think when hiring, it's all still quite generic and not enough people actually show how this role, this company specifically, can advance your career. And I think the ones that are doing that are building great brands that people do want to work for, and they're probably finding it easier.
Honest truths, are you seeing enough organisations advertise with the salary in the job description, or are they keeping it competitive with experience?
Most of them keep it competitive with experience. I think those that can put the salary up there save themselves a lot of time. You know, had a head of FM for a national gym chain say, yeah, when I put an advert, I'll get 600 responses. Like, how many of them are relevant? Like 15, if they were lucky from that. But again, a lot of it is people that are way over the salary bracket or actually even so far underneath it. Things like that will massively help people in terms of hiring, but they don't because it gives them more wiggle room. If you put a role out, a salary of 50K, and then you have to re-advertise it 3 weeks later at 55K, it shows, it makes you look cheap. It makes it like, it kind of puts a question mark against that role to people that aren't desperate for a role or more actively looking. So more businesses should do it, but I think they don't because it gives them that wiggle room. And equally, again, this is one of the problems of the industry is, again, I don't think there is always that transparency with salary. And you will see some big disparities in companies, whether it's because people have chooped over, so they've got to keep to a certain salary. Maybe it's they thought they could get away with it, which I hope isn't the case, but probably does still happen. So I think as soon as you put a salary on your advert, if anyone in your business isn't earning that salary, which they probably will be, you're going to have 10 angry knocks on your door or 10 people in your team starting to look externally. So they should do it. They don't do it. But they should do it.
I think it has to change.
Yeah,
I think when you're recruiting, you've got to be transparent about the level of candidate you're looking for.
Honestly.
And the salary is one of the key metrics that will reflect that.
Massively. And again, every time I put a job advert up, I mean, we don't find most of our people through job adverts, but when we do, I'll always put the salary on it in 99% of cases. Yeah. The reason being for that is, again, like, I want people to see the ranges. I don't want people applying for roles that are less than what they're earning right now unless they're making that decision consciously. But also, I think sometimes people don't do it because they think that if I've got someone who should be looking at the bottom end, they're going to ask for the top end. But at the same time, that's on me. If I can't justify why I don't think that person's worth that top end, then they should go in at that top end of the salary bracket.
So now I want to focus on your advice for facility managers. Mm-hmm. What are your top tips to facility managers for writing a mega CV?
In terms of writing a mega CV, I think first and foremost, so many people just copy the job description. And the problem is a CV isn't selling that job title within that organization. It's supposed to be selling what you've done individually. So tailor it as much as possible, which starts with things like, what's the type of building you personally manage? What's the size of it? If it's a portfolio, again, is it multi-client? Is it industrial? Is it commercial? What's the split? If you're talking about teams you've managed, you can say you've managed a team, but someone that's managed a team of 20 individuals probably has better team management skills than someone that's managed two. If you're talking about budgetary experience as well, like, again, what's the value of that? And sometimes that information can be commercially sensitive, but first and foremost, tailor it wherever possible because you're selling yourself, not just that role within company X. The other thing I would say is a lot of people put a lot of guff in there. And a lot of people feel they need to have these really big personal bios and, you know, big personal statements. According to Indeed, most hiring managers review a CV for 6 seconds. I don't look at whether you like reading or dog walking or playing five-a-side football. I really don't. It might be an interesting tidbit in an interview if you get there, but it's actually looking at what your experience has been, what your qualifications have been, and what your key achievements have been with tangibles to back it up. So you've got to make that information stand out straight away. You might find someone says something completely different in regards to this, but I think bullet points as well rather than continuous prose, because again, we've all got short attention spans these days, Instagram, what you name it. So you've got to make the information stand out as clear as possible. And anything that makes it easier for the person who's reading it, who will be doing so for just 6 seconds on average, will probably enhance your chances of making that key experience stand out.
So moving on to the interview process, okay. What are your, again, your top tips for how candidates sort of handle the interview?
The first thing I always say when I'm prepping anyone for any interview is, yeah, everyone knows to research the company, but research yourself. You should be able to talk about what's on your CV. And again, as I mentioned in the previous point about putting your CV together, you should know what your key deliverables have been. I think I've mentioned earlier about FMs not necessarily selling themselves as well. So have a think about what you've actually done that made the biggest difference to either your building or your customers or your client. If you can quantify that, if you can say a tangible result, know that and be able to articulate it. I did X, which led to Y result for my customers, because then it will show you're aware of the impact of what you're doing. And again, at the end of the day, yeah, we want to work with the right people. You want to build a good culture, but you also want someone that can deliver. So you've got to make sure that that is abundantly clear. A lot of FMs, when they've been interviewed by FMs, will talk in very vague terms because, well, this person's a head of department. They know what I'm talking about because they've done it. Whereas I find that most interviewers, they'll do it the other way around, where unless something's explicitly clear, I don't want to make an assumption that someone's got a certain level of knowledge. Because if I then hire them and they don't have it, I'm now stuck with this person having to train them more than I thought I would. So make it abundantly clear exactly what you have done, what the tangible results from it, so that they can't walk out of that interview room not knowing how good you are.
Paint us a picture. What do you think the FM job market will look like over the next 5 years?
I think, as I've mentioned, it is becoming more diverse. We are seeing more young people get into it because, frankly, they have to as people retire. We are seeing it have less of a gender balance, and we're seeing more women in senior leadership positions going forward. So I think it will continue in that regards. To be honest, though, I don't see that much changing other than what we're doing right now, because there is that pressure for instant results. We were saying it 11 years ago that there was a real talent shortage of that top tier talent. It's still being said now, 11 years later, for me. And I don't know, it feels kind of pessimistic for me to be saying that, but I frankly think the same thing will still be happening. I think there'll be that scramble for that top talent, but I think a lot of businesses we'll probably still be in the same position unless we can start having those conversations and start selling ourselves as an industry better to the wider market, to the wider economy.
Well, that's what this podcast is about.
Hopefully,
let's
yeah.
keep having these conversations. We have a closing tradition on the FM Fix. It's called the FM Fix Reactive Round.
Okay.
There's no time for thinking. Whatever comes into your head first. Are you ready?
Hit me.
Hard surfaces or soft surfaces? Which is harder to hire for?
Soft surfaces, hands down.
Biggest red flag on a CV?
Lying on a CV. You get caught out. As much as it seems it's a big industry, it's a small one. We've had people before where they've gone for interviews. They've omitted something on the CV from 3-4 years ago. And it turns out, actually, working for that company as their old line manager at the company they've taken off the CV never ends well. Just don't do it.
Interesting. One word that sums up the FM market right now.
Treacle. Processes are slower. They can still move quickly, but in essence, hiring managers are slower decision making because they're so worried about getting the wrong hire right now. And that means that processes are taking longer. There's more dithering. And it means that the real best people are being snapped up by people that will move faster. But treacle's the word I'd use.
A dream FM client or brand you'd love to connect with?
My absolute dream FM client, and it's not great from an account building perspective because there'll probably be just the one role, but the Natural History Museum. I used to love going there as a little kid. I saw that Diplodocus more times than anything. I've got pictures of me growing up in front of like the blue whale they had there and getting bigger and bigger each year. I just love to work on that building. And I find the older ones just so fascinating. There's so much more history and versatility, I guess, with and variety with those type of buildings. So the Natural History Museum, hands down.
So thank you so much, Chris, for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you and learning more about your experience. And I think your advice for facility managers out there is going to be so important. So guys, take a listen.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Cool.